Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 603, titled I Told You So, Part 3. And this program is being recorded on July 8th of the year 2007. The broadcast is not titled the way it is in order to exercise puffery. I'm not blowing my own horn or touting my own reputation here. But rather, what I'm hoping to do to a certain extent is to illustrate a methodology. What we're going to be doing is listening to portions of several different For the Record programs over a period of a few years, and they're going to be dealing with some aspects of the investigation into September 11th. Specifically, we're going to be listening to some information originally broadcast in July of 2001, then aired right before the attacks, that followed by a program from April of 2002, that followed by a program from April of 2004, and that followed by a program from the end of May, also of 2004. But first, we're going to be listening to For the Record program 310. This program was recorded on July 8th of 2001, but it was broadcast, on the evening of September 10th. That's a Monday of 2001 on sister station WFMU, which is right across the river from where the World Trade Center used to be. It's right across the river from Ground Zero. So from 6 to 7 p.m. the evening before the attacks, this basically is what I had to say at Ground Zero. The following is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, July 6th of the year 2001. This is a Chronicle story by Zachary Coyle, C-O-I-L-E, and Bob Egelko, or Egelko, E-G-E-L-K-O. Its headline, SF Prosecutor Mueller Picked to Lead FBI and Mend Its Image. And in a sidebar to this article, there's discussion of some of the top cases that Mueller oversaw. It reads, while he was head of the Justice Department's criminal division, Robert S. Mueller III oversaw several high-profile matters. The prosecution of Panamanian strongman Manuel Noriega on drug charges, the inquiry into the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, and the BCCI investigation, a huge international fraud case. Three of these, the three that I just named, impinge directly not only on the Iran-Contra scandal, but also on the overlapping Iraqgate scandal. And one of the things that's significant about these cases is that had they been investigated to the full, to the extent that they might have, these almost certainly would have brought down George Bush, certainly led to his impeachment, if not his ultimate conviction on criminal charges. The lead paragraph of this story, by the way, reads, President Bush tapped Robert S. Mueller III, the U.S. attorney in San Francisco, as the new director of the FBI yesterday, seeking a no-nonsense manager to repair the image of an agency accused of botching several recent high-profile cases. And we're going to chat about BCCI in a minute. More about the BCCI case, this from an article in the Chronicle the preceding day. This is from Tuesday, actually 2 days early. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, July 3rd of the year 2001. This is an article by Stacy Finns, F-I-N-Z, of the Chronicle. It's headlined, In the Running for FBI Director, subtitled, Bush Considers Low-Key SF Federal Prosecutor for Job. And of the BCCI investigation, by the way, the BCCI was called the Bank of Credit, was the abbreviation for an institution called the Bank of Credit and Commerce International. This was nicknamed the Bank for Crooks and crooks and something else. Anyway, WAGS gave it a different name. BCCI was heavily involved not only with some of the funding of the Iran-Contra scandal, but also served as a vehicle for the repository of drug money and also for the funds used by various terrorist groups as well. Again, it was deeply involved, and the BCCI was deeply involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Oliver North used an account with BCCI for many of his machinations. And BCCI is an institution with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard. More about BCCI in a minute. Skipping down in this story, from Boston, Mueller went to Washington, D.C., where he served as the head of the Justice Department's criminal division in George Bush's administration. It was there that he oversaw the prosecutions of Noriega and headed up investigation of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International scandal, a huge fraud case in which people throughout the Third World lost their life savings. By the time the BCCI probe picked up steam, several Washington power brokers were implicated, and allegations surfaced that the Justice Department was balking at the investigation because of alleged CIA links. By the way, those alleged CIA links are they're a matter of public record. Continuing, then-Representative Charles Schumer, Democrat of New York, fired off a report critical of the Justice Department's treatment of the case, saying the failure to pursue wrongdoing might be because too many prominent politicians had connections to BCCI. Quote, there is possibly a cover-up or conspiracy, unquote, Schumer, now a U.S. senator, said in 1991. Again quoting, but it is also a 50% chance that it was just ineptitude, a failure to go after white-collar crime. Well, I suspect that there was a whole lot more to it than that. Again, BCCI was centrally involved in the Iran-Contra affair. It was one of the many connections that would have undoubtedly led back to the elder George Bush, who was not only was in the loop, but was the main orchestrator of the Iran-Contra affair. The vehicle for realizing the Iran-Contra and Iraq-Aid machinations were the intergovernmental agency networks that were put together pursuant to the Vice President's Task Force on Combating Terrorism that was headed up by George Bush, and the networks that were created out of the recommendations that task force put together were utilized by George Bush as sort of his own private intelligence service. They were the main vehicle for the realizing of both the Iran-Contra machinations and the Iraq-Aid machinations, and had the BCCI affair been properly investigated, it would have gone back to the elder George Bush. It also, as we're going to talk about in a minute, might have very well gone forward and tarred the current George Bush, George II, with the very same brush. I would note in a couple of different For the Record programs, For the Record program 249 and also in number 228, I went into a meeting that took place in July of 1986 between George Bush, that's the elder George Bush, and Amiram Nir Nisker, and also military intelligence agent Charles McKee, who was in charge of a group of U.S. military intelligence operatives who were in the Middle East looking to free the hostages that had been held as part of the imbroglio in the Iran-Contra affair. The McKee team died in the bombing of Pan Am 103, and indeed it has been established that the U.S. State Department had advance warning that a Pan Am plane was going to be blown up, and indeed the evidence in the bombing of Pan Am 103 not only does not point exclusively to Libya, but the larger view of the investigation points in the direction of Manzar al-Qassar, a Syrian terrorist and weapons trafficker who was a main operative in the Iran-Contra affair, and who was alleged by the Pan Am 103 insurance investigators report to have been the principal executor of the Pan Am 103 bombing. That Pan Am insurance investigators report also alleges that the handlers for Manzar al-Qassar had advance warning that the bomb was going to go off and that they deliberately prevented the flight from being canceled and therefore bore responsibility for the bombing of Pan Am 103 and the elimination of the McKee team, who were alleged by the insurance investigators report to have come across the connections between the Iran-Contra players and Manzar al-Qassar. I believe it was Oliver Buck Revelle's son. Oliver Revelle was a former FBI official also involved with the investigations of Iran-Contra, and some would maintain that he helped to attenuate some of those investigations. But Revelle's son, I believe, was going to be on Pan Am 103. He was one of a number of people who was able to cancel his seat on that particular flight. The McKee team were not so lucky, and again, it is alleged in the Pan Am insurance investigators report that the McKee team had come across the connections between Manzar al-Qassar and the Iran-Contra player, and that they were headed back to the United States to, among other things, blow the whistle on that particular connection. It's been established and again discussed in For the Record 228 and 249 that George Bush was in a meeting at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem in July of 1986, at which the aforementioned Charles McKee and also Amiram Nir Nisker, one of the Israeli players in the Iran-Contra affair, discussed some of the machinations. Lawrence Walsh, the aforementioned Iran-Contra special prosecutor, was interested in investigating this particular meeting. It was one of the areas of stonewalling that helped to frustrate his investigation. And again, had that particular meeting been properly investigated, it might very well have led to the impeachment, perhaps even the criminal conviction, of the elder George Bush. Certainly, Charles McKee was present at that meeting, and his death in Pan Am 103 or on the Pan Am 103 flight precluded any testimony that he might have given either about that meeting or about the alleged discovery of the Manzur El-Kassar Iran-Contra connection. Manuel Noriega's involvement with Iran-Contra and with the Bush milieu, the elder George Bush milieu, is a matter of public record. And one of the things that's interesting about the BCCI connection is that one of the people involved with the milieu of the BCCI was a fellow named James R. Bath, who by his own account allegedly was recruited by the elder George Bush into the Central Intelligence Agency and assigned to babysit some very wealthy Saudi Arabian clients. James R. Bath put up approximately 5% of the working capital that went to found Arbusto Energy, George Bush's first oil company. That's George II, W's first oil company. And as we've discussed in numerous broadcasts, for the record, program number 256, the aforementioned number 277, broadcast number 249, and for the record, program number 186, the acquaintances of James R. Bath at the time said that he had very little money of his own, so in all probability, the capital that went to found, that portion of the capital that went to found Arbusto Energy probably came from James R. Bath's wealthy Saudi Arabian clients, who included the Bin Laden family, because James R. Bath was the Texas business representative for the Bin Laden family. Osama Bin Laden is the terrorist extraordinaire, and his operatives are alleged to have executed the bombing of the destroyer Cole during the course of the campaign last fall, and the bombing of the destroyer Cole was among the factors that helped to make the Clinton administration and, by extension, Al Gore look weak, soft on terrorism, incapable of dealing with these Middle Eastern Islamic fanatics who were raising hell with American lives at the same time as the price of oil was going up. Essentially the same double bind that we saw in the year 2000, when a combination of rising oil prices, resulting inflation and economic hardship, and the seeming impotence of the United States in the face of the Islamic militants in Iran and the taking of the hostages helped to send Jimmy Carter's presidency to the happy hunting ground. One of the interesting things about the BCCI connection is that had it been properly investigated, it might very well have gone to James R. Bath, revealing his business connections with the Bin Laden family, and ultimately it could have seen to it that George W. would have been blocked from reaching the heady heights that he currently occupies. Of course, George W. is currently a heartbeat away from the presidency, somewhat feeble heartbeat under the circumstances, that of course being Dick Cheney. Again, I would note that Bill Clinton took a lot of heat for pardoning Mark Rich. In the aforementioned For the Record program number 277, there's discussion of the fact that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee's report on the BCCI listed as among the points to be investigated Mark Rich's use of agricultural credits in the 1980s through BCCI. Agricultural credits were the main vehicle for accomplishing the funding of Iraq, that funding of the weaponry that Saddam Hussein came into possession of, one of the major factors, the central element in the BNL or Iraqgate scandal, also overseen by the elder George Bush. Speaking of the bombing of the destroyer Cole, allegedly or ostensibly performed by the operatives of Osama bin Laden, we read the following from the San Francisco Chronicle of Wednesday, June 20th of the year 2001. This is an article by Diana Elias of the AP. It's Dateline Kuwait and headlined, Islamic militants brag they bombed warship Cole. It reads in part as follows. Islamic militant Osama bin Laden's Afghanistan-based group boasts in a recruitment videotape that its followers bombed the destroyer Cole in Yemen's Aden Harbor last year. The video, circulating among Muslim militants and viewed here yesterday, would represent the clearest link yet between Osama bin Laden and the October 12th attack that killed 17 American sailors and wounded 39. But bin Laden himself does not specifically make that claim on the tape and has not accepted responsibility in the past. Well, the final determination vis-a-vis the bombing of the destroyer Cole, again, something that certainly made the Clinton administration and by extension Al Gore look weak in the eyes of the American people, again, the impotence in the face of international and Islamic terrorism, et cetera, in combination with rising petroleum prices, was essentially the same double bind that helped to do in Jimmy Carter in 1980. So with the appointment of Robert Mueller, we have somebody whose pursuit of some of the national security-related investigations leading in the direction of both Georges Bush, particularly the elder George Bush, was, shall we say, less than vigorous. I would also note that as George II took office, the leadership of the FBI has changed, and a number of things have come to light that have made the position of Louis Freeh very uncomfortable. Of course, the revelations concerning the Robert Hansen spying case helped to embarrass the FBI in conjunction with a number of other things that had gone on in the last 10 years. I also wonder about the surfacing of the documents about the Oklahoma City bombing and Timothy McVeigh. Those documents surfaced just before Timothy McVeigh's scheduled execution date. I think it is most unfortunate that McVeigh was executed and that the many, many evidentiary tributaries vis-a-vis the Oklahoma City bombing leading in the direction of a much more complex, a much broader milieu than just McVeigh and Nichols, both of whom I believe were involved, but who were only two relatively low-level players in a much wider scenario. One of the questions I have, and I want to stress that this is a question that I have, not a statement that I'm making, but I wonder whether, in addition to its own obvious missteps, I wonder whether perhaps the FBI is being destabilized. This will appear crazy to uninitiated listeners, but it has been my contention for some time now that, in fact, one of the things bedeviling the United States, in addition to its own miscreants and certainly the ineptitude that is in no short supply within elements of the U.S. government, I think that the United States itself is in a state of destabilization and is being subverted by a fascist slash Nazi fifth column, not unlike the way the French government was subverted prior to World War II, one of the reasons why the numerically superior French military succumbed so quickly to the Nazi invasion. The French elite, in many ways, were more sympathetic to Nazism and fascism than they were to the social front of Léon Blum. I suspect, and it has been my contention, my belief for some time, that the United States is also in a state of advanced subversion, as insane as that will undoubtedly appear to uninitiated listeners. I believe that the U.S. itself is being subverted from within, and I believe that one of the institutions that is being so subverted is the FBI. And again, I wonder about the surfacing of the McVeigh documents, the Robert Hansen spying case, and the resignation of Louis Freeh, and whether perhaps, and again I stress perhaps, these were being deliberately orchestrated in order to effect a change of leadership at the FBI and to put someone in charge of the Bureau, which is obviously the Federal Police of the United States, who would be far more sympathetic to covering up the stink that grew during the presidency of the elder George Bush. I really believe that the elder George Bush was a three-time U.S. president. I think he was the real power behind the throne when Ronald Reagan was on the throne, and of course he had his own administration. And one of the questions I have about Robert Mueller, again an individual whose pursuit of Bush-related investigations has been less than vigorous in the past, I wonder whether perhaps it was deemed necessary to get someone in charge of the FBI who was more sympathetic to the machinations of the Bush family than Louis Freeh might have been. Again, that's a question I have, not a statement that I am making. However, in connection with the alleged Osama bin Laden connection to the USS Cole, the role that appears to have played in the 2000 campaign, and the recent shakeup at the FBI, one should perhaps consider the following. This is from the Wall Street Journal of Friday, July 6th of the year 2001. This is an article by David S. Cloud and Neil King, Jr. It's Dateline Washington and headlined, U.S. Faces Hurdles in Approach to USS Cole Probe. And it reads in part as follows. when a senior Federal Bureau of Investigation official sought recently to go to Yemen, scene of last year's deadly terrorist attack on the warship USS Cole, he ran into an unlikely obstacle, U.S. Ambassador to Yemen, Barbara Bodine, B-O-D-I-N-E. With the Yemenis complaining of too many FBI agents in their country, Ms. Bodine took the unusual step of denying access to John O'Neill, the hard-charging supervisor of the case who normally works in New York, according to two officials familiar with the decision. FBI brass appealed to Ms. Bodine's superiors, but her decision was allowed to stand. Skipping down, the FBI pulled all its investigators out of the country last month, that would have been June, after receiving what it called a specific and credible, unquote, security threat. Well, I don't know precisely what that specific and credible security threat was, but I would note with the James R. Bath, George W. Bush, Arbusto Energy connection to BCCI and to the Bin Laden family, and with Robert Mueller's position as a less than vigorous investigator of Pan Am 103 and BCCI, both of which would have brought down the elder George Bush, and the BCCI investigation might very well have brought down George II as well. I wonder about the State Department role in the attenuation of the FBI's investigation of the USS Cole. And I wonder about the changing of the guard, so to speak, at the FBI in connection with the bombing of the USS Cole. And I strongly encourage members of the listening audience to consider the hypothesis that I've been advancing on and off over the years, that for all of its shortcomings and for all of its misdeeds, the FBI and other aspects of the U.S. government are in fact being subverted from within. And again, the operant paradigm is one of comparison with what happened in France prior to the Second World War. That has been my belief for some time, and it's something I think listeners should examine very critically. That was from For the Record program number 310, recorded in early July of 2001, aired on September 10th from 6 to 7 p.m. on sister station WFMU the evening before the attacks. Basically, that's what I had to say at Ground Zero the evening before the attacks. Next, we're going to jump ahead, and specifically we're going to listen to some information first broadcast in April of 2002 on For the Record, or in For the Record 356, but taken in this instance from For the Record program 454, recorded in April of 2004. And we're going to take a look at where the investigation of the money trail that I talked about or foreshadowed in For the Record 310 might lead. This is where it went. In an article that appeared again in the Wall Street Journal of April 18, 2002, Talat Otman, a close political ally of both George's Bush, a man who had given a Muslim benediction at the Republican convention in 2000, a director of Harkin Energy, one of George Bush's failed energy companies, interceded with the targets of Operation Green Quest with then-Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, who was subsequently let go. From the article by Roger Simpson and by Glenn R. Simpson and Roger Thoreau, among the Muslim leaders attending the meeting with O'Neill was Talat Otman, a longtime associate and supporter of President Bush's family, who gave a benediction at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia in August of 2000. But he also serves with Barzinji on the board of Amana Mutual Funds Trust, an investment firm founded by M. Yaqub Mirza, the Northern Virginia businessman who set up most of the entities targeted by the Treasury and whose tax records were sought in the raid. Then skipping down, the case also highlights conflicts between the Bush administration's domestic political goals and its war on terror. GOP officials began courting the U.S. Muslim community intensely in the late 1990s, seeking to add that ethnic bloc to the party's political base. And skipping down again, more about Yaqub Mirza, on whose boards Talat Otman sits. Two nonprofits affiliated with Mr. Mirza and named in the search warrant, the SAR Foundation and the Heritage Education Trust Incorporated, held large blocks of shares in Amana's mutual funds in 1997, according to SEC records. The SEC documents and other records detailing connections between Mr. Otman and the Islamic Institute, on the board of which Mr. Otman serves, and the raided groups were compiled by the National Security News Service, a Washington-based nonprofit research group. Skipping down again, Mr. Ottman also was on the board of Mr. Safouri's and Norquist's Islamic Institute, the GOP-leaning group that received $20,000 from the Safa Trust, one of the raid's targets. The president of the Safa Trust, Jamal Barzinji, is a former business associate of Switzerland-based investor Youssef Nada, whose assets were frozen last fall after the Treasury designated him a person suspected of giving aid to terrorists. Parenthetically, Jamal Barzinji is also associated with the World Assembly of Muslim Youth, and of course, Al-Taqwa, or Nada Management, is one of the principal Muslim Brotherhood financial organs involved with financing Al-Qaeda and Hamas. Youssef Nada was a former Third Reich intelligence agent and is also a defendant in the trillion-dollar lawsuit filed by survivors of the victims of 9/11. Continuing with the article, Mr. Ottman has ties to the Bush family going back to the 1980s when he served with George W. Bush on the board of a Texas petroleum firm, Harkin Oil and Gas Incorporated. Mr. Ottman has visited the White House during the administrations of both President Bush and his father, George H.W. Bush. Another article about the Operation Green Quest raids, this also from the Wall Street Journal, this from March 22nd of 2002. Funds under terror probe flowed from offshore. This was also authored by Glenn R. Simpson working with Michael Phillips. Talking about some of the organizations targeted in the raids and on whose behalf Bush associate Talat Ottman interceded. And again, Ottman, Karl Rove, and Grover Norquist set up the Islamic Institute, which has heavily overlapped with the targets of the Operation Green Quest raids. Speaking of the organizations targeted, these include Al-Taqwa Management, a recently liquidated Swiss company the U.S. government believes acted as a banker for Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda terrorist network. Two people affiliated with the companies and charities are linked by records to entities already designated as terrorists by the U.S. government. Hisham al-Talib, who served as an officer of SAR, the International Institute of Islamic Thought, and Safa Trust Incorporated, another Mirza charity during the 1970s, was an officer of firms run by Youssef M. Nada, records show. Mr. Nada is a Swiss-based businessman whose assets have been frozen by the U.S. for alleged involvement in terrorist financing and is alleged by U.S. officials to be a key figure in the Taqwa network. Jamal Barzinji, an officer of Mr. Mirza's company Marjak and other entities, also was involved with Mr. Nada's companies in the 1970s, according to bank documents from Liechtenstein. A message was left yesterday for Mr. Barzinji at his address in Herndon. Mr. Barzinji and Mr. Talib live across the street from each other. A third business associate of Mr. Nada, Ali Galeb Himat, who also has been designated by the Treasury as aiding terrorism, is listed as an official of the Geneva branch of another charity operated by Mr. Mirza, the International Islamic Charitable Organization. And again, reviewing from the book Dollars for Terror about Youssef Nada, and again, he's an individual whose activities are heavily overlapped with this GOP milieu on whose behalf Talat Ottman and others interceded. But Youssef Nada is even better known to the Egyptian intelligence services, who have evidence of his membership in the armed branch of the Muslim Brothers in the 1940s. At that time, according to the same sources, he was working for the Abwehr under Admiral Canaris and took part in a plot against King Farouk. This was not the first time that the path of the Muslim Brothers crossed that of the servants of the Third Reich. By the way, the Abwehr was German military intelligence during World War II. That again from For the Record program number 454, recorded in April of 2004. The descriptions for these shows and a vast wealth of information available on the Spitfire website and linked websites. Go to www.spitfirelist.com and then just follow the bouncing ball. Follow the many, many links to the cornucopia of information that's available on the Spitfire and linked websites. More on side two, but this concludes side one of For the Record program number 603. I Told You So, part three. This has been recorded on July 8th of 2007. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.